Father, I don't know what today brings. We're happy to see the sunshine after so many days of rain. But it could be that some people in this room today are not feeling sunny in their souls. It could be that they've had the hardest week they've ever had. Maybe they had the best week they've ever had. Father, you know what's going on in our hearts. You know what's going on in the hearts of everybody in this room. And you know what we need. And Father, I just pray that through singing some songs and preaching a sermon, that you work supernaturally in our hearts today. Speak to us in a way that we need to hear it. Maybe we're far from you and we know that we need to be drawn back to you. Do that for us today. Maybe we're right exactly where we're supposed to be, but we're so scared to take the next step. Give us the boldness to do that. Maybe we're in this room, Lord, and we don't even know who you are. Father, I pray that you would reveal yourself to those people today who don't know you. Whatever it is that you need to do in our lives today, Lord, speak to us through your word. Allow us to be open and allow us to be changeable if needs be, Lord. If we need to change the way that we think about something, then allow us, make us be open to change. Father, I pray that I do a good job of communicating your word. It is always too much of a weight to bear to do this, Lord, because it's just so hard. Human speaking to humans about godly things, but I pray that you would work through me to do my job today and do it well. Now, Father, I pray for everybody in this room that you would speak to our souls today. And we ask these things in your name. Amen. Okay, we've been talking about the early church. Acts chapter 2 today, verses 42 through 47. We're going to look at the DNA of the early church. Okay, we're going to look in verses 42 through 47. It's a descriptive statement about the early church. If you're new to the series, if you're new to our church, we've been talking about the first church. In Acts chapter 1 starts the beginning of the church that we know it. And in Acts chapter 2, verses 42 through 47, it's describing what that church looks like. It's giving us the DNA, the characteristics of that church. And our goal as a church in 2018 is just to do and be what they did and were. And if we do that, I think that we'll be doing the right thing. So let's take a look at what this church was and what made them so special and what made them turn the whole world upside down. Acts chapter 2, verses 42 through 47. This is the first and early church. They had just added 3,000, so we're talking about 3,200 people in the first church. Verse 42, "And they, the church, devoted themselves to the apostles' teachings and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayers. And all came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. And they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to their number, day by day, those who were being saved." So what we do is we look at this passage and see, what did they do? What made this church special? Or were they special? Let's just take a look at them. First we see, we kind of talked about this in Acts chapter 1, that they were together. They weren't just physically together. They were together in a passion. They had the same fire, and that was serving the Lord. Okay, so they're together in passion. They're not just coexisting with each other. They're actually doing the same thing together. They're on the same mission together. We see that they were glad and sincere and generous. So they weren't miserable, like, I got to go around and hang out with that guy again. They actually liked to be around each other. And in fact, they couldn't get enough of each other. It wasn't just one day a week. It was every single day, day by day. They loved each other so much. They wanted to be in each other's homes. You want to come over? I've been hoping that you were asking because I want you to come over. Come on, let's go hang out. And we see also that they were sacrificially devoted to the mission. They weren't just saying, yeah, yeah, I'll do the minimum. They were giving up their stuff for the mission. They were giving up their stuff for their brothers and sisters in Christ. If the one had an extra stuff, if they had a mansion and their brother was in need, they would sell their mansion to help their brother in need. So they were together in passion. They were together on the same mission. They actually liked to be around each other. And they sacrificially, they gave things up because they were devoted to the cause of making disciples. I asked this when we went over Acts chapter 1. Have you ever been part of a church like this? I hope that we're getting there, but I don't think that we're there yet. In my time as a Christian, I've never been in a church that I think was right here. And so what we see here is actually radical. This is crazy in the church. They wanted to be around each other all the time. When was the last time you saw a church who really wanted to be in each other's homes all the time? Usually after day three, you're like, get out. I want to hang out by myself. Like, please, enough. This is radical in the church. Not many churches like this. But you know the sad part about our reality is, this is not that radical in our culture. This is radical in church, but not that radical in culture. I don't know much about it, just a Google search, just a website search. Anybody was ever in the Peace Corps? Anybody ever do that? Like the people give 2 years of their lives to go serve? The Peace Corps is a group of people who are singularly focused. They want to help people in need, cure disease, you know, help people in poverty, figure out some logistical problems in these other countries. So there's people that are sacrificially giving up 2 years of their lives. They're devoted to this, and they're giving themselves up for this cause to help people, to serve people in need. And they're happy about it. You read the testimonies, and they love it. They love being in the Peace Corps. They love spending that time to help people. So I ask myself the question, is the Peace Corps where people are together, they're happy about it, and they're devoted to a cause, and they're sacrificing, is it really that different from the church? And if it is, how? How is it different than the church? Sadly, there are some churches in America that would not be distinguishable between the Peace Corps. Take a picture of the Peace Corps person over in Africa, right? Stereotypical white guy with some kids from a different country, right? It's like, oh, that looks like a missions trip. Some churches in America, they call themselves churches, I wouldn't call them that. All they're devoted to is just helping people. Which is not a bad thing. And if my kids wanted to go into Peace Corps, that's great. There's nothing wrong with serving people. But a Peace Corps is not the church. So we should be different than other groups. How was the church in Acts chapter 2 verses 42 different than just a group of people who want to help people? How is it different? And the answer is found in verse 43. And awe came upon every soul. Just that one. The apostles did the signs and wonders, but every single person, 3,200 people in that church, all came upon every soul. The literal translation is, all kept occurring on their soul. They kept feeling a sense of awe. A-W-E. This simple word, awe, which is the Greek word phobos. Can you say phobos? That's pretty good. Phobos. I'm going to be saying it a lot, so you'll get to know the Greek word phobos. This is what makes them different. This is what makes them different from any other group that's ever existed. Any other group that's ever existed. Oh, phobos. Those of you who have a little footnote there, if you have a pew Bible, I know, or a chair Bible, I know that you do. At your footnote, what does it say? Also known as fear. Okay, so fear. This word is awe, A-W-E, but it also means fear, or it can be translated fear. So here's the literal definition of phobos. Here's the literal definition of what this group of people, every single person in the church, was filled or was had this on their soul. Phobos, which is fear, awe, which we have, dread, or terror. So the church was terrified. They were afraid. What did they have the fear of? They had a fear of the Lord. What makes this group distinguishable from every other group that's ever existed is the fear of the Lord. The phobos of God. So, I don't know what comes to mind when I say fear, but a lot of different things. And so we're going to take our time to understand, what did they have? What was so special about? What is this phobos that they had? Because here's the deal. If you're a Christian, you should have phobos. You should have the fear of the Lord in your soul. It should be on your soul. So let's talk about it and make sure that we've got it, because we need to have it. First thing we need to say is what it is not. A lot of times when you say fear, something negative comes into your mind. Okay? Everything when it comes to the Lord is good. So this is not a bad fear. This is a good fear. What is a bad fear? Right? The most extreme example is a child who's been abused by their father. Right? That child, when he's going home, he doesn't think, yeah, I get to see my dad. He's afraid because his dad might be in a bad mood that day. That's bad fear. That's fear that's not good. That is not the fear of the Lord. Okay? So just so we're clear. It's not as if God is some abusive God waiting to strike us down if He's in a bad mood. That's not God. God is a loving God. Okay? So know that. It's not a negative fear. It's a positive fear. So how does that work? How do you have a positive, healthy fear of something? Because we want it. And we need to have it as Christians. We need to have phobos in our life. And it's not bad, but it is good. So what is a healthy fear of the Lord? What does that mean, Ben? You just say these words. I don't know what that really means. So let me give you my definition, and then we're going to walk through what it really means to have the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord, basically my English definition is this. It is part of the honest response when a human being comes into contact with the one true God. Say that again. It is part of the honest response when a human being comes into contact with the one true God. Phobos is when a human being comes in contact in some way or another with the God of the universe. And if they are honest with themselves, if we are honest with yourselves, because you can be like, not that big of a deal. You can trick yourself and not be honest. But if you're honest with yourself, if you come face to face with the God of the universe, part of your response will be terror, will be phobos. It will be fear. So that's the definition that I'm going to give, and we're going to walk through what that means. An honest response when a human being comes face to face with the God of the universe. So let's talk about some examples so we can get an idea of what this means. Let's talk about some earthly examples of how this works. I'm going to move this. Need some running room today. Anybody ever been to the Grand Canyon? Couple. Good job. Anybody ever been to Niagara Falls? Okay, so if you haven't been to the Grand Canyon or Niagara Falls, think about the most beautiful and amazing thing. You've been on a mountaintop, something like that. I've never been to Niagara Falls or the Grand Canyon, but I can still imagine. When you're standing at the foot of the Grand Canyon or the bar, whatever it is that you're standing, or you're standing at Niagara Falls, you may use the words something like this, like magnificent. Indescribable. There's something that human words cannot dictate when you're standing at the edge of the Grand Canyon. It's just a big hole, but there's something very powerful about it. There's something magnificent about this giant canyon. It's awesome. It's magnificent. Niagara Falls, the power of those falls is amazing. And if you're honest, it does something to you, right? It touches your soul in some kind of weird way. Maybe a way that you can't describe. Maybe if you're standing at the Grand Canyon, maybe it gets in the depths of your soul and reminds you, you ain't that big of a deal. You're pretty small, actually, in this earth. Right? But there's something magnificent. When you come into contact with something so powerful, it gets to your soul. It gets down in there. It's not just, oh, that was just a big canyon. Cool. It's something different. Think about something natural, naturally powerful. You guys ever been on an elephant? Anybody been on an elephant? Okay, some people been on an elephant. You've been around an elephant, right? Right? And you're around this animal, and it's, I mean, how much does it weigh? A couple tons? 4,000 or 5,000 pounds, whatever it weighs. It's a huge animal. And it has solid muscle. It is a full power animal. And if it wanted to, it could crush you, right? It could stamp on your chest and crush your insides and kill you. There is that much power in this giant animal. That touches your soul. It kind of makes you like, ooh. Kind of makes you feel a little bit different. Or maybe you ever been close to a bolt of lightning, right? A storm is so strong and it kind of shakes you. And it's not just, oh, that was a lightning. Like, it's like, whoa, there's something in my soul that shakes me. So something powerful, when you come into contact with something powerful, it's not just, oh yeah, it was just a big canyon. Oh, it was just an elephant. There's something in your soul that changes. When you come into contact, when human beings come into contact something with something very powerful, it changes you. Let me use a very extreme example. Let's just say you're a teenager and you got your earbuds on, you're not paying attention to anything. You're walking down what you thought was a abandoned railroad track, but in fact there was a freight train coming at 60 miles an hour. That powerful machine slams into you. It's going to make you different. It's going to change you. You're going to look different after you're hit by such a powerful force. So that sense of awe that you get at the Grand Canyon, that sense of smallness that you get when you look at this vast waterfall, it's so powerful. This power of these animals and these natural disasters, they grip your soul. They make you feel a certain way. That's phobos. That's a sense of respect, a sense of awe, but really also a sense of fear. An elephant can kill me. So you take that feeling that you've experienced and then you multiply it by about a million to get what it is to be the phobos of the Lord. Because no matter how magnificent the Grand Canyon is, it doesn't compare to how magnificent the God of the universe is. No matter how powerful that elephant is, that bolt of lightning, no matter how much power is behind it, it doesn't even get close to the power of God. And so when a human being comes into contact with the God of the universe, the most powerful entity that's ever existed, it changes you, if you're honest. It touches you at the depths of your soul in a way that nothing else can. When you walk away from being interacting with the God of the universe, you're different. You're not the same. He's so powerful. The raw, almighty power of God changes a soul if you let it. So this is so much more than just standing at the Grand Canyon being amazed at what God created. This is coming face to face with the God of the universe and feeling phobos in a way that we can't even understand or describe. Let's talk about a few people in the New Testament who felt phobos. Matthew chapter 14, if you will go there. Matthew chapter 14. Here's some people who felt some phobos. Now here's the deal with the disciples. Here's the deal with Jesus, if you guys don't know. Jesus Christ is fully God and fully man. Okay? How do you do that? I don't know. You have to be God to do the impossible, and He happens to be God. So that's great. Okay? So Jesus is fully God and fully man. It's called the hypostatic union. So sometimes the disciples look at Jesus and He's like a man, right? He's just walking around. He's hanging out. He seems like a man. But sometimes God does things. Jesus does things that are godly. That can't be done. And that's when the disciples respond with phobos. Matthew chapter 14, verses 22. Starting in verse 22. Immediately He made the disciples get into the boat and go before them to the other side, while He dismissed the crowds. So the disciples are in a boat. When evening came, He was there alone. But the boat, by this time, was a long way away from land, beaten by the waves, for the wind was against them. The disciples are in a storm. Jesus is on land. Verse 25 of Matthew chapter 14. And in the fourth watch of the night, He came to them, walking on the sea. Jesus, who we've been hanging out with, now He's done some crazy things, but every time He does a godly thing, it's still going to strike them. This man is doing what? He's walking on the water. Can people walk on water? No. But Jesus is doing it. But when the disciples saw Him on the sea, they were terrified. They were freaked out. People don't walk on the water. This doesn't make any sense. They were phobos'd. They were terrified because they saw Jesus Christ in a godly work. He's walking on water. You can't do that. They thought He was a ghost. This is crazy. There's something in their soul. Jesus is He walking on the water? Do you see that? Yeah. Oh, you do too? He's walking on the water? That is scary stuff. That's phobos. That's the fear of the Lord. Let's go to another one. Luke chapter 7. This one I think is really phobos-y. It'll be a new adjective, phobos-y. Luke 7. Let me ask you a question. I'll just tell you a story. A little story about little baby Ben, or little kid Ben when I was growing up. I remember one of my relatives died, and being a little kid, you're exposed to death, and there's this casket up there, and your parents say you need to go up and show your respects and pray and do what you got to do. And so you're a little kid, don't know how old I was, and you go up to the casket, and you look over, and there's this body, and you know in your mind that the person is not there, that their soul is not there. But they've done such a good job. It's kind of freaky, right? It's kind of freaky because you're looking at this body and it's been fixed in a way that's supposed to look real. And as a child, I was thinking, please don't get up, right? Please don't raise your arm. That's going to scare me. Please don't open your eyes. I remember being so scared about that. Luke chapter 7, verses 11. Soon afterwards, Jesus went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a great crowd went with him. And as he drew to the gate of the town, behold, a man who had died was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow, and a considerable crowd from the town was with her. And when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her and said to her, "Do not weep. What a gentle God we worship." Then he came up and touched the bier, which is like the casket. And the bearers stood still. And Jesus said, "Young man, I say to you, arise." Just read 15 alone and I'll read it out for you. There's a dead man in a casket. Jesus says, "Arise, young man." And the dead man sat up and began to speak. Phobos. That's scary. Side note, what do you think he said? Right? A dead man wakes up from death. He's like, "Oh, what's going on here?" Right? Like, that's where my mind goes sometimes. What does a dead man say when he wakes up? I don't know. He didn't tell us. But I know what the people felt on that day. Verse 16, fear seized them all. Phobos seized their souls. That's what happens when a human being comes into contact with God, with the God of the universe. Yeah, there's respect, there's awe, but there's also terror. That doesn't happen. That's scary. That dead man just sat up and started talking. Last one, Acts chapter 5. I want you to get a really good idea of what it means to fear the Lord. Okay? We're going to get to Acts chapter 5 soon enough. But let me tell you, before we get to Acts chapter 5 in our study of Acts, here's the theme of Acts chapter 5, verses 1 through 11. Don't mess with God. Don't play games with God. Okay? So here's what happens in Acts chapter 5. This is past our passage in Acts chapter 2. The church is doing great, and people are selling their stuff. And they're saying, "Hey, look, my brother's in need. I'm going to sell my stuff so my brother can get something because he's struggling." And Ananias and Sapphira started playing games with God. And so they bought a piece of property. They had a piece of property, and they sold it. Let's just say, for number's sake, they sold it for $100,000. 100,000 shekels, whatever the thing was at that time, right? And so they came before the church and they said, "We sold this piece of land so we could give it to the church. We want to give all of this away." And they didn't. We don't have all the details, but basically they said, let's just say, "We got $50,000 for this piece of land. We're going to give it all to the church." But they lied because they kept some of it for themselves. It was their land. They could have done whatever they wanted. They didn't have to sell it. They didn't have to lie, but they wanted to feel good about themselves. "We gave it all away," but they lied. Husband comes in. "Hey, I did this thing." "Really?" Boom, drops dead. Verse 7, after an interval of about 3 hours, his wife came in, not knowing what had happened. She comes in, going to do the same thing that he did. And Peter said to her, "Tell me whether you sold the land for so much." He's given her a chance to get it right, but she keeps playing games with God. And she said, "Yes, for so much." But Peter said to her, "How is it that you have agreed together to test the Spirit of the Lord? Behold, the feet of those who have buried your husband are at the door, and they will carry you out." Oops. Made the wrong one on that one. "Immediately she fell down at his feet and breathed her last. When the young men came in, they found her dead, and they carried her out and buried her beside her husband." Right? Don't play games with God. Like, I don't know your soul. Nobody in this room knows your soul. Just be honest with God, because He knows the real deal. So don't come in here, "Oh, I'm great." If you're struggling, be struggling. Don't go crazy on Saturday night doing some stupid things and come in here and act like you're Mr. Perfect. Say, I'm a wretched man. I need to be forgiven. Don't play games with God. I don't know if this is what's going to happen, but that's what happens there. Now, let's just imagine that this happened. Let's imagine if somebody in this church was playing games with God, and they come up and they wanted to make a testimony, and they're lying to God, and one of us knows it and says, "You're lying to the Holy Spirit." Boom, they drop dead. What would you feel if somebody dropped dead right there because they just lied to God? Same thing they felt in verse 11. "And great fear came upon the whole church and upon all who heard these things." Phobos. That's what happens when you come into contact with the God of the universe. Whoa, He's serious. This is the serious deal here. Phobos. It's the fear of the Lord. It is awe. It is respect, but it's also terror. There's something about it when you come into contact with the God of the universe. It shakes you to the soul. And it's good. It's good. And that dead man sat up, man, that's good. That's good fear. And Jesus is walking on water. Man, that's cool. I'm scared, but that's cool. Back to Acts chapter 2. And all, phobos, came upon every soul. 3,200 people, 3,300, whatever it was. The entire church, every single person in Acts chapter 2 is filled with the fear of the Lord. What would you think if everybody in a group, every single person in a group was filled with this sense of awe, this sense of terror for the Lord? That would be different than any other group we've ever met. Because not every other group that we've ever seen has encountered God and had the fear of the Lord on their souls. So that's what sets this group apart from any other group. That's what makes this group distinct. Yeah, they serve. Yeah, they help people, which is good and what God has called us to do. But there is something that sets them apart. They have come face to face with the God of the universe and they have been honest and they have said, "Whoa, God is the real deal. He's more magnificent, more powerful, more indescribable than anything I've ever met. And my soul is different." The entire church, they were different. Their people looked at them and their neighbors looked at them and said, "Something's different about you. You're not the same." "Yeah, I came face to face with the God of the universe and I'll never be the same again." In 2018 in America, do you have phobos? Do you have the fear of the Lord in your soul? You should. Have you come into contact with the one true God and felt this sense of awe and fear and terror and respect and reverence? Christians, we need phobos. We need to have the fear of the Lord. It's not all good stuff. I mean, it's good. Fear is good, but it's not all, "I just want to feel good today." I mean, you need to have the fear of the Lord on your soul. It's a big deal. So my question is simple. That concept, that feeling, that understanding of how magnificent God is in a way that changes my soul forever. If I'm hit by a freight train, I don't look the same. If I'm hit by the God of the universe, I shouldn't look the same when I was before. I should look different because God is so much more powerful than a freight train. Do you have the fear of the Lord on your soul? There's three answers to that question. Number one, it could be that your answer is no. You could be like, "I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't know. I come into church and I sit down and I go home. I don't know what you're talking about. Nothing has changed my soul." So your answer might be no. "I have no idea what you're talking about. I know what it's like to stand in the Grand Canyon, but I don't know what it's like to have the fear of the Lord." Only thing I can say is you need to process through what that means. I'm not going to make a judgment about your soul, but you need to process through. If you have not grasped the fear of the Lord, you've not felt like, "Oh, Jesus is God is serious, man. This is some crazy, awesome, scary stuff." If you haven't gone down that road, you need to process why you haven't. Especially if you call yourself a Christian. You need to know, why haven't I felt this? Because every other human being that interacts with the God of the universe, they feel it. They get it. They understand it. So if your answer is no, "I have no idea what you're talking about," you need to process through that. Find me. Find somebody that you know in this church. Find a believer and say, I don't know what he's talking about. I don't know. Have that conversation. It might be that your answer is, "I used to. There was a time in my life when I did feel that power, but not anymore. There was a time in my life when everything was different and my heart was different and I was changed, but I don't feel like that's the way that it is anymore." The Greek here literally means, "and they kept feeling a sense of awe." It didn't go away. I didn't go on a missions trip and feel really excited for the Lord, and 6 weeks later, I was right back into the same old lifestyle. I didn't have an emotional worship experience and walk the aisle, and then 6 weeks later, I was right back to the same old stuff I was doing before. They kept feeling a sense of awe. It didn't stop. Ever. If your answer is, "I used to," you need to process through why that is. You need to figure out, why are you not experiencing that awe anymore of the Lord? Because God hasn't changed. God is just as powerful as He ever was. So that hasn't changed. So if you're not feeling that sense of awe, then something has changed in your heart, and you need to discover what that is. And I will tell you the next few weeks' sermons will help you on that journey. And the last one is this. Maybe your answer is, I am so there. I am right there. I am terrified of God every morning that I wake up, and it's a good fear. I love God so much, but He is God. He is my friend, but He is also the God of the universe. I hope that's where we all are. I hope that you are just right there, and you're like, yes, man, God is crazy, awesome, scary, good. And here's my advice to you if you are right where you're supposed to be. Let it shine. Let the fear of the Lord in your heart shine to the world. In our humanity, we think people don't want to hear that. Oh, I don't want to tell them the freakiness that I felt the other day because I felt awesome when I was with God. I don't want to tell people about it. They're going to get freaked out. They're going to call me a Jesus freak. Let that light shine. Let me just read this for you really quick, because here's the amazing thing. Well, Acts chapter 2, verses 47, here's the amazing thing. This group is filled with the fear of the Lord. What happens at the back part of 47? And the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved. This group of people were terrified and had a healthy fear of the Lord, and they kept growing. More people came. People weren't put off by it, they were drawn to it. People are drawn to the fear of the Lord. Acts chapter 5, again, Ananias and Sapphira just killed. The church is freaked out. The people are freaked out. Verse 13 makes sense. Verse 14 does not make sense. Verse 13, none of the rest, none of the people outside of the church dared join them. So there's like, man, those people are serious. That dude just died there the other day, and they dared not join them. But here's the part that doesn't make sense. And more than ever, believers were added to the Lord. They were so afraid to join the church. They were freaked out by the church. And yet, more than ever, the church was growing. I can't explain it to you, but people are drawn to the fear of the Lord. So don't hide it. Just be what is natural. Come face to face with God. Be freaked out. Be terrified. And then let that light shine. Because people are drawn to it. They're not drawn to dynamic preaching. They're not drawn to the best youth program. They're not drawn to the best worship experience. Those things are fine, and we want to do those things excellent. But people are drawn to the power of the Lord. That's what really matters. So you can have terrible preaching, and if the Lord is there, then people will be drawn to it. Let me just answer this question. Maybe that's not computing. You're like, I don't think that people will be drawn to the fear of the Lord. I'm not telling people about my fear of the Lord. There's a man named Pascal, super smart mathematician. Mathematician, Christian, if you don't think those things go together, they do. Pascal said this. He says that every human being has a God-shaped hole in their heart, or a God-shaped vacuum in their heart. Here's what Pascal said. Nothing in this world can fill that void. And so every single human being is trying to fill a void in their soul. And it's a God-shaped void. And the only thing that can fill it is God. And so if there's people out there trying to find, I got this hole in this vacuum in my life. They're trying to do it through relationships. They're trying to do it through drugs and alcohol. They're trying to do it through success. They're trying to do it through every other thing other than God. Because that's what this world tells us, right? But the reality is there's nothing that can satisfy that depth of their soul except for the God of the universe. And so when they look at you and you're totally freaked out by God, they might look at you and say, maybe that's it. That person is a little bit crazy, but I like it. That person's a little bit terrified, but maybe that's what I don't have. Because they don't seem to have that same void that I have. And so maybe that's what's happening. All I can say is if the fear of the Lord is on your soul, let it shine. If you're here today and you're not a believer, there's a void in your soul. I can't fill it. Great preaching can't fill it. Your relationship can't fill it. Right, Jerry Maguire, you complete me. No, the other person does not complete you. The God of the universe completes you. If you're here today, you're either in one of two places. You're still searching to fill that vacuum, and that's why you're here, or you've given up and you think it's not able to be filled. I have a good news for both of those people. If you're searching, the answer is Jesus Christ. If you've given up, You shouldn't, because the answer is there, and His name is Jesus Christ. Let's pray. Father, I actually wonder what's going on in this room today. I don't know what people are thinking about the fear of the Lord. I hope they're excited about it. I hope that if there's non-Christians in this room, they're drawn to it. That's up to you. Our job is to come into contact with the God of the universe and just let whatever happens, happens. So Father, we're coming to You today. Hopefully, we are in contact with You today. You're that close to our souls. We can feel the fear of the Lord today. It's not some one-time thing. It's not some only in a certain moment. We can feel that fear every day, all the time. So Father, I pray that we would understand that it's good. It's good to be freaked out by You, because if it was just all explainable, then You wouldn't be God. You're God and we can't describe You. That's how amazing You are. So when we come face to face with who You are, it's a little bit scary. But we know it's good because we need it. And Father, I just pray for anyone in this room who's not a Christian. Come face to face with them today. It doesn't have to be some weird experience. It can just be a silent voice that says to them that I'm here and I'm real. And maybe they can sense the fear of the Lord today. And maybe their lives will never be the same ever again. Maybe getting hit by the most powerful entity in the entire universe will change their souls today. Father, we ask these things in Your name. Amen.